Welcome to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Are you someone who doesn't have children by circumstance, choice, or chance? This show is for our collective community. Are you someone who influences policy, DEI initiatives, or media narratives? Learn how you can co-create inclusive, equitable policies and environments for people without children. Now, here is your host, Christine Erickson.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you for listening to New Legacy Radio. I'm Christine Erickson, and I'm also the founder of New Legacy Institute. The Institute was created to bring together a collective community of people without children to create meaningful change for social, reproductive, and workplace equity and policy. Today, we have a very special guest with us, and I have been anticipating this conversation for a long time. Rhodes Perry is with us today. Rhodes has written fabulous work and does fabulous work around workplace belonging. He believes in the power of authenticity at work and puts his belief into practice by helping inclusive leaders, DEI professionals, and visionaries at every level build more safety, trust, and belonging to transform the culture of work. He is a best-selling author, sought-after keynoter, podcast host, and an award-winning social entrepreneur. Rhodes also created and hosts the annual Belonging at Some at Work, which I hope we'll talk about more later, which is a virtual DEI conference empowering inclusive leaders to build community, gain new skills, and recommit to building healthier workplace cultures. He currently serves on the National LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce's Transgender Inclusion Task Force, the Cascade Aid Project's Board of Directors, and on the University of Notre Dame Alumni Association's Rainbow Community Task Force. And there's more, but I will pause at that. It's a beautiful range of work that he has done and continues to do. Welcome, and thank you so much for being here, Rhodes.
Christine, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So today we're going to, as a DEI specialist and this focus on belonging that we're going to talk about today, I thought we'd just start at the beginning for our listeners of what is the DEI framework or DEIB, as I have always used, because I love the belonging. Yeah. How would you, describe that beyond the basic things that we hear every day about, sort of surface inclusion, surface diversity that I think a lot of people just take that away as meh, when really these are systems that, can create such change for us in our everyday lives, and particularly in the workplace, by doing these things intentionally and on purpose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think they're all outcomes, right? So when you hear this, and it almost feels like I come from the LGBTQ plus community, so it almost feels like alphabet soup of like, oh my gosh, there's another right. letter. What do they all mean? And I think like when you just think about it as outcomes, right? Very practically, when you think of diversity, this could be thinking about a people outcome of hiring and thinking about the levels of leadership throughout an organization and making sure that all levels reflect the communities or the clients, customers that you're serving, right? That's an outcome, you can measure it. Inclusion, it's a behavioral outcome. So what are the skills that you're equipping with employees or leaders, right? And are you evaluating if those leaders or employees are demonstrating those behaviors, right? Like that's an outcome. In equity, people get really confused about equity, but thinking about it on a systems level, right? Like what are the barriers that employees are experiencing, and how do you remove the barriers? How do you start to upend them? And who's experiencing those barriers, right? So those are all outcomes. And when it comes to belonging, this is sometimes I have a good friend, Bernadette Smith, who calls this the holy grail of DEI. And it's kind of like it's an emotional outcome, right? And I think sometimes people think, this is elusive, like it feels good, but how do we actually do it? And I love Coqual, used to be the Center for Talent and Innovation in New York City. They produced a report, I think it was in 2019, called The Power of Belonging. And their definition of belonging in the workplace is my favorite, which is really just kind of four ingredients of belonging. So you feel seen. So, you're appreciated for who you are. Your talent, your genius is valued. You feel connected. So you have really good relationships with your colleagues. And because of those relationships, you feel supported. That's the third element. So you get what you need so you can do your best work. And then the last one is you feel pride. So you feel that your values are in alignment with your organization's values. Like that is belonging. We can measure all of that. Yeah. And, you know, when it's not there, there's that cost, that sting of social exclusion. And that really is feeling invisible, feeling disconnected, discouraged, and this kind of last element, which is shame. You know, is there something about me that's fundamentally wrong that is making me feel like I don't belong here, I don't fit in, I feel excluded, right? So so I work with leaders to help them kind of recognize the power of belonging and then also the cost of doing nothing. So if you don't address this, you know, what is the cost of social exclusion? What is the cost of feeling lonely? You know, and unfortunately, too many of us are feeling this in the workplace.
Absolutely. Those are big words, right? Shame, social exclusion. I mean, how we carry that based on our own experiences anyway, and then to have it amplified, yeah, perhaps in a professional space, very, very harmful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what brought you to this perspective, this space around this love of belonging, the systems of belonging, and what informed you, and yeah, what was your process around this a bit?
Yeah. I mean, personal experience is kind of my root, right? So mm-hmm. For your listeners, people that don't know me, I'm a very out, you know, bisexual, transgender person, transgender guy. And, you know, I came out when I was 19. So I was still kind of like in college. And I knew, you know, this was the late 90s, early aughts. And I never wanted to go back in the closet, right? So I would look for employers where I could be myself and be appreciated for the culture ad that I bring. And a lot of organizations, you know, they had, you know, most of the organizations I went to, really good intentions, right? And just so many different barriers that many leaders just didn't know were there, right? That I ran into. So, you know, trying to access healthcare benefits that could take care of my needs, right? You know, is a really good example. So much of what I was hired for were jobs that weren't necessarily shifting culture, but so mm-hmm. much of what I did in addition to my job, you know, and some people would label this as emotional labor. I viewed it as this needs to change. I want to make it better, obviously for myself and also for future generations of workers coming in or employees coming in that I don't want anyone else to ever have to experience this again. So I wanted to kind of drop the ladder down. And so I started doing that, you know, just in my very first job. And then over time, I realized, you know what, I actually kind of like doing this. So how do I do more of this? And so I've had a very interesting career going from like policy to advocacy work to now running my own business, helping leaders figure this out. And I love it. I feel like I'm kind of in stride with my purpose. And I like being a resource to help people.
Beautiful. And I feel that in your work. I mean, you know, that clarity and that alignment, it comes through, you know, in everything that I see and have read and also in speaking with you. So thank you for sharing that. Maybe you should go back also to, so let's talk about your latest work, Imagine Belonging, and take us through some of those structures that we were talking about earlier offline, you know, the power dynamics and the power structures and the belonging spaces. How did you bring that all together over time? And let's name some of those and talk about naming them as you do in your work.
Yeah. And just for like a little bit of context. So the first book that I put out is called Belonging at Work, and it really helps people wrap their arms around the what, why, and how of belonging. Yeah. So, you know, if listeners are kind of like, I'm there, that might be where you want to first start.
That's true. Just
the second book that I put out, and that was really about everyday actions anyone can take. But Imagine Belonging is really for those leaders that are on the path of wanting to lead more inclusively. So they might identify as inclusive leaders. They may aspire to be that. And it was really to address one of the biggest issues that I see that causes DEI work to either stall out or outright fail, which is that lack of that long-term vision. What is the kind of culture that you desire, you crave to work within that may not be present right now, right? So it's a different kind of culture. It moves away from the status quo, and it allows leaders to kind of answer this question, who are we intentionally including and who might we be unintentionally excluding? And what do we do about that second piece? So this book is really broken down into four parts. And the first one gets at that question that you just asked, which is about culture. And what we have to do with culture is, and I do this with leaders often, is really kind of giving them a pen or a set of brushes and paints mm-hmm. and a blank canvas to say, what is that culture you want? And I like to start there, you know, just kind of building up from what people desire. And sometimes, actually more often than not, people kind of, they freeze up because it's like, wait, you're giving me permission to dream and I'm not really mm-hmm. sure what to do with this. And sometimes that's because people may be in environments where they're not psychologically safe to offer that kind of feedback of what could be better. And so they tend to restrict, you know, they're in those kind of like stress hormones of cortisol and adrenaline of like, I'm not sure. So that if I'm feeling that in a room, it's kind of like, okay, let's start with like, what are some of the things that get in the way of those four ingredients of belonging? What's getting in the way of having real authentic connections with your colleagues? And, you know, more often than not, people start to name things. You know, I feel like I can't ask for help when I need it. I feel like I can't, you know, offer this kind of feedback even in this space because we work in an environment that really wants excellence, right? That there's no room for mistakes, right?
Yeah, and so it's like, wait a minute, all the time.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, totally. So, or there's this kind of this sense of urgency. And these are all rooted in traits of white supremacy culture. They're traits of oppressive culture, right? And without putting that label on it, just getting people to start to name those specific things that impact them. And then we start to kind of say, okay, if this is taking place in the organization, and we've been able to name it, what are some of those possibilities to move away from this and to actually start building something that may have never existed before? And then that's where we start to take ownership over it. So to get at your question though, of like, what are some of those oppressive forces? The book really kind of looks at, you know, and this comes from bell hooks' language of kind of those interlocking systems of oppression. What are they? Right. And so we just talked about white supremacy culture as being one of them, probably the biggest piece that many of these other systems kind of flow from. And that kind of is merged with patriarchy. Like, and I think like in the work that you do, patriarchy, we can talk about that a lot, right? But that's there, you know, there's ableism. There's even, you know, thinking about spatial, you know, in terms of, you know, when we think about where we're from, right, and we think about kind of the impacts of immigration and some of the barriers that that creates in the workplace, it goes pretty deep, right? So, you know, just how do they operate together? Because none of this operates in a vacuum. And chances are, you know, for many listeners, you know, regardless of how you identify, chances are there's one of those systems, if not more, that are causing harm to you, that are limiting what you can actually contribute to the workforce, to your job, to being, you know, in alignment for the things that you, you know, wherever your creative talent and genius are, these systems get in the way. And so what's like, you know, if you think on a macro level, what could be possible for our planet if we started to address this? And, you know, we can each have agency just to be ourselves, whatever that means, without causing harm to other people and really, you know, showing up in our truth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in the work, you know, looking at pronatalism as another space of oppression, and that people without children are not recognized as a marginalized group, inside or outside of the workplace, but particularly in the workplace where you're now dealing with policies and benefits and equities and inequities. Your work has made me think about how it, I've had so many conversations about, well, let's look at what the LGBTQI plus community has done, right? Because the movement has been so strong and over these years and gotten to all of these places policy-wise and in the workplace. And yet, really, it's about creating these systems of belonging for whatever is, right? So, but because we're going into these systems structured the way that they are, it feels like we have to first self-identify. Right? And go against this to go forward. And that's really tricky. you know, how much of a pushback you give and how much is in the language that you're using, removing barriers and moving away. Mm-hmm. And in my leadership work, my leadership development work with horses, it's one thing I always, whenever I hear that term move away, I have to think of, because when horses don't feel safe, they move away.
Yeah.
They move away, right? So yeah. How are people moving away in organizations, you know? And then what barriers do we need to move away? I just love that phrase because it's so powerful, to move away, you know, as an individual, let alone an organization, as you're talking about a global culture. And really in the Institute, as I shared with you earlier when we were offline, that was the vision. Our lens is people without children. It's pronatalism, singleism. But it's because it works with all of these other things. Our community is necessarily intersectional. Thank you, Kimberly Crenshaw. You know, it is. So as you said, we're touching in all of these systems, these different systems of belongings that you write about, that you speak about. And so it's not just one, but we have to come in with this one to first be seen and recognized as that. And I just hope that we can speak more to that as we go along today.
Yeah. I love that. And I love the work that you're doing. And there's so many kind of, I mean, it's intersectional with kind of in the movement around LGBTQ+ inclusion, right?
Right.
And, you know, that kind of definition of family is really key. And it's something huge, you know, that the LGBTQ movement started. And I think when we think about family and the work that you're leading, you know, like, what is family when we think about the workplace, when we see, you know, we're working with other adults, you know, and assuming what family is based on children, right? And
right.
Like that is real, that talk about limiting and not really talk about invisibility. So much of what you do is connected, you know, to this, you know, and like that biggest system of oppression, which is patriarchy, right? Like and kind of the roots of how we think about, and I'm just going to put in air quotes, like traditional family.
Right.
Who are we leaving out from that kind of conversation?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it would be interesting to hear how this shows up in your work. But definitely, you know, when I work with organizations to talk about the importance of LGBTQ+ inclusion, one of the biggest things that pops up is, oh, well, we don't talk about sex in the workplace. It's like, well, wait a second.
Wow.
We're not talking about sexual behavior. We're talking about identity. We're talking about a core piece about who people are and how they construct their lives and their families. And, you know, one of the examples that I share, you know, because almost half, you know, it's 2022, almost half of LGBTQ+ workers in the US are closeted. You know, even with laws and policies, you know, you can be in San Francisco, you can be in New York City, that number still holds constant because of, you know, the fear of negative consequence in talking about your family, right? And so, you know, if someone's like, oh, you know, I was out with the kids and we played golf over the weekend, whatever, right? You have colleagues that can't do that. And so they're not able to build trust and rapport with you. And again, it goes back to agency, being able to share, you know, to meet the conversation in a way to build connection. And if you don't have that agency to share in a way that, if you're not in the back of your mind, if I share this information, you know, I don't have kids, but I spent time with my partner over the weekend, you know, like, how will that be viewed in a different way to signal that I'm not a part of this group, right? I'm, you know, so I don't know.
Right. And the two sides of that where it's, you know, silencing because of the anticipated response, and then also being asked things, you know, especially around not having children. It's, you know, people commonly ask, you know, do you have children? Are you married? You know, the sort of status quo defining elements of what is family, what is a family friendly workplace.
Yeah.
And in the Institute, we define family as however you want to define it. Basically, I mean, that's the best way of saying it. I don't know how I would define that for someone else. So it's however you define it. You know, if it's yourself, it's yourself plus another being, whatever that looks like for you, multiple people, chosen people. I just think that, you know, when you talk about imagining belonging globally, to me, that's it. It is however you define and share your life. you know? But there are all these elements and identities that we have to go through. And those identities and those stories are important, you know, like within our community, we have, there are many identifying labels, but the most common are, to simplify, is, you know, child-free, people who did not want children by choice, and childless, people who wanted to have children and didn't. And even trying to bring that together as a community, that, you know, it is important that our stories are known to be different, but it is not minimizing the story to come together as a community, you know? And so at some point, all of these different spaces of belonging, if we come together, then it is just the world. Then we're humans again, right? We're humans again. The difference is, of course, how we would be treated and how we would treat others and how we would be recognized and seen and all of the things that you speak to. So certainly, yes, I think, you know, a lot of the conversation you said, well, we're not here to talk about, you know, sexuality, or I think a big one is, it's not exactly an apples to apples, but the question of, like, well, how can you not like children, or how can you not prioritize children? Like, to say that you have equality to a child, a human life to a human life, is not accepted. You know, when we talk about, you know, abortion, Roe v. Wade on the line right now, it's the care of individuals that don't exist versus individuals who exist. I mean, you can go along the line of where that valuation or devaluation, whether it's specifically toward women or anybody, it goes back to that. It's like, how do you not prioritize? Last week I spoke with somebody, Donna Ward, who we talked about crises and the prioritization of safety, you know, and with the invasion in Ukraine, we spoke a lot about, first, there were racial incidents as well, and biases in that. But who is looking out for the LGBTQI community? The LGBTQI community was. And I said, look at this, you know, who is looking out for us, or our elders, our single elders? And we also spoke about just the origination of that phrase, women and children first. And what does that mean today? What did it ever mean? And where was it rooted? But, you know, what does that mean? But I saw that visibly again. A community taking care of a community. They weren't waiting.
Yeah.
And I thought, my gosh, it's outside of the workplace, but it's exactly that system of belonging that you're talking about. Because I was like, wow, we're starting to ask this question, but we're not taking action. You know, we're not cohesive enough to take action. So I kind of went all over it, but there's so many layers to this. It's to be valued the same as a child or as a parent. So there's a real value comparison there, I think, in the workplace, or when those questions are asked within the workplace. I think we feel it when you step back and look at policies, you know, benefits, those kind of things, that, you know, a lifestyle isn't as valued. One lifestyle isn't as valuable as another, or even understood, really. We talk about it. I think if I really dial back, I think, do they even see what our needs are, you know, and how do we begin to do that? And it's not just the push for making this fair and equitable, but really how to have the conversations where people understand it and see us as full beings, not vis-a-vis another relationship, whether that's a partner or a child, you know, how do we all be seen as full beings and our need to belong?
Yeah, I think that gets to the support piece of belonging, which is getting what you need so you can do your best work. And so when you're talking about kind of reproductive freedom, right? You know, if your employer offers healthcare insurance, my healthcare is going to look really different from yours, as I imagine everybody else who's listening right now. But it's the agency to access what you need so you can show up and do your best work. And I think that comes to going back to having the agency, you know, having the choice, and then recognizing that as long as we have that agency in the workplace and it's not causing harm to another person's safety, not their comfort, their safety, then, you know, these are kind of like good kind of guidelines to engage, you know, and to try to check in, like, Do I have agency here? Does another person have agency? Am I causing harm with the way that I'm showing up? Am I being harmed? Right? Like, we have to ask these kind of careful questions. And then I think working together across differences can be much more productive, right? But right. If we're not asking those questions, you know, and we're okay in the workplace, we've got some power and privilege. Yeah. So how do we use that, right?
Right.
So these are bigger questions.
Yes. I know. It's hard to know where to keep going. There's so many things. But yeah, that's lovely. I think back to the, you know, reading your work and talking about the community of people without children and or singles, because I think it's kind of hard to separate that at times, you know, from the pronatalist space or singleism, as Bob DiPaolo speaks to. We need to build our space of belonging. We need to build that space of belonging because it is not currently recognized. Pronatalism is not seen as a problem, except by those who are experiencing it. It has not become visible like other movements have allowed people to do. And I feel like we're at the beginning of that, and yet it's timely. And so I think maybe when we come back, we can speak a little bit more about how you can guide us around that and that conversation of how do we do this? You know, how much do we fight the system and how much do we create this space for ourselves? We've been speaking with Rhodes Perry, and DEI specialist, and we will take a short pause here and we'll be right back with more. Thank you.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
New Legacy Institute is committed to equitable and inclusive change for people without children. We invite you to become a member of New Legacy Institute and to share what matters most to you. Participate in our research surveys, upcoming webinars, and efforts to influence policy, media narratives, and DEI initiatives that fully recognize our community. Check us out online at newlegacyinstitute.com. Join us today.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa, play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You are listening to New Legacy Radio with Christine Erickson. Now back to the show. Here is Christine Erickson.
Welcome back, everybody. Today we are speaking about belonging in the workplace with Rhodes Perry. Welcome back, Rhodes. Now we're going to move into speaking a bit about how do we go about creating a framework for belonging or a space of belonging as pronatalism is not addressed in the workplace. Some key points and things drawn from what Rhodes has written in his books and how we can apply that as a community. Where would you like to start with that, Rhodes?
Yeah, it's a big question, and something to like bring into the conversation and maybe a challenge to your listeners is, you know, a quick Google search on a really simple video, and I can't remember, it might have been like PNC Bank that created it, Inclusion Starts With I. No, I think it was Accenture. Inclusion Starts With I. Really short video. And people, it's, you know, kind of everyday employees, you know, sharing a sign. You know, there's no kind of words. It's just music in the background. And it's talking about like these microaggressions or subtle acts of exclusion that make you feel the opposite of belonging, right? And there were several people that had up signs talking about, you know, whether having children or not showed how committed they were to their work or not committed to their families. And so much of that was kind of divided in this kind of binary sense of gender. You know, so, you know, if a woman was pictured having kids, that she wasn't committed to her work. If a man was presented with having kids and he was spending, you know, leaving work to go and take care of them, you know, that he wasn't as committed, or no, he was more committed to his work than his family, right? So it was talking about kids, but then there were people without children, right? Talking about the assumptions made in terms of, oh, well, you can stay later at work, right? Of course you can stay, you can work on the weekend, you know, you don't, right? You know, and I thought that that was really interesting, you know, and I know that your work goes way deeper than that, right? But just to kind of get that out in the space, in diversity, equity, and inclusion space, because we talk about family a lot, and I still think that there's a lot of opportunity, and you all, you know, you're a leader in the space. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are doing this work. So what are the opportunities of using the frameworks that are offered in Imagine Belonging to add to it? And when we were at the break, we were just kind of talking. I was like, I love the work that you're doing, because, you know, just in talking about these interlocking systems of oppression and thinking about patriarchy and kind of like how patriarchy defines kind of quote unquote the traditional family, right? That there's a lot to add in that space of real examples of the harm that is caused when people assume things about who you are and kind of how you construct family, when probably 9 times out of 10, those assumptions are wrong until people take the time to get to know you. So that's kind of like what's popping up for me, along with this concept of Sonder, which is something that I learned from Seth Godin in the Alt-MBA program. I love the concept. Maybe you're familiar with it, but it's like this idea that each random person you pass is living a life as vivid and as complex as your own, and that their lives are 100% invisible to you until you take the time to get to know them, right? So like, how often do we apply that concept anywhere in our life, let alone in the workplace, when we think about our colleagues and those that we work with, of like, oh, right, you know, Christine has this, like, Christine is the star of her own movie, and I'm just like this extra character that happens to walk by her in the office every day, right? Like, you know, what is it going to take for me to really get to know what's going on in that movie and that script, right? And how can I be respectful of being curious about that? I mean, do we do that? Do we do that in general? Like,
we meet people with written scripts, whether they're our own or, you know, our initial assessment. And I think that's what a lot of things, you know, that are invasive, like asking people questions, particularly in the workplace. Do you have children? Are you married? And then the response that follows, it's really a projection. It's not about the person, but it's a social pattern that is so deeply ingrained that it's acceptable. And yet if you peel away the layers of what those questions are, how deeply personal and private they are, and what they might mean differently to people, why do we keep doing this? You know, I always say, you know, instead of just asking someone, you know, 20 questions because you really want to get to know them, there's a way to hear, you know, you create trust, you gain consent by waiting for someone to share with you what they're ready to share. And you know when that feeling is mutual, or when it happens, you know, you hit it off with somebody and you go there. You can, it doesn't mean you can't ever do that. But I think more often than not, we're assuming, projecting, and invading people's movie. You know, we're editing it before we've read the script.
Yeah. And I think, like, I love everything that you just said. You know, I mean, maybe that's, you know, when we think about the how-tos, or, you know, kind of leaving this interview with some kind of concrete actions you can practice, right? You know, is just how do you move towards a person, right? Because it is about building trust. It is about building safety. And these are things to get to know someone's true movie. It's it's more of a horizontal timeline. It's not just kind of a moment in time where we're networking for 5 minutes and then we, right? Like, that's not the moment to kind of invade someone's movie, right? But to make a move is to be put yourself in a vulnerable position first, right? If you can feel that you can be vulnerable, you know, in particular with a colleague that you're building a relationship with, you know, the best way to do that is to offer up something maybe that you've processed that's relevant to work, that's going to build a stronger relationship, and then move from there. You know, just in getting to know you, you know, it's like, well, I can share with you, you know, I don't have kids, right? And I totally can relate to the work that you lead. Like, I feel safe enough to share that with you now, right? And then that could be a place where I've taken that move towards you. And if you feel like it's on you to kind of take that next move towards me, and my cue is if you don't offer up things, it's like, okay, you know, like that's where we're at right now. Like, and it's so subtle, right? It's so subtle because I want to know, right? But I don't invade, right?
I call those consent cues, you know, because that's what it is. And it is subtle because we're not used to looking for it or listening for it. But definitely to create that, you know, a space of psychological safety, of trust, all of that belonging in the workplace or just in relationships in general. I mean, it's a framework for relationships in general, I think. Just to take that pause and sort of clear out your mind, you know, you might do your first off impression or whatever, but just, you know, set it aside. It doesn't mean anything. It really doesn't mean anything.
Totally.
You know, for what's next in that conversation, or, you know, it's just something your mind runs through. It's your patterns, and just leave it alone.
And I think, like, just what you were saying too, right, is that like listening component, right? So when you're sharing, you know, I mean, how deeply in a world of constant distractions that we have, right? Like, I mean, I'm even thinking about conversations that I have with my partner. If I'm like, if I'm distracted, I'm reading, I'm on the phone or whatever, it's like, okay, I have to put this down and I have to like totally, you know, face her to like have a conversation to receive that information. And then to take the time to kind of say, okay, so what I'm hearing is, did I get that right? You know, like how often do we actually do that? Because it's like, I try to practice this all the time and maybe I'm like 70%,
That's good.
You know, I mean, that's, I don't know, maybe but that's our practice too, because we feel, I mean, think for anybody listening right now, think of like a time when you've been fully listened to, where you feel complete, like I've shared something from my heart. And I shared it with someone that I trust, and they received that story with care. And even if they didn't kind of say more to it, it just felt like it was message received. Think about how you feel about that, and how can you do that for another person? Especially when you're building long-term working relationships with people, it's all about who you like, know, and trust. And the trust is so key. Right. So, you know, I think like an activity people might want to try is just with someone that you know, someone that you love, someone that's connected to you, you know, like, you know, the question, you know, to ask them, you know, to go a little bit deeper, right? And just listen to what they share or what they don't share, right? And that would be a good kind of, I don't know. I mean, I think that that's, these are like, they sound basics, like basic skills. And at the same time, these are the skills of the life. Of our lifetime, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we've had things put upon us in that way. We grew up in patterns of response, you know, to extreme things in life, to everyday things in life. And yeah, I mean, the difference between that and feeling like somebody is doing a checklist assessment of you, you know, married, do you have children, you know, what's your sexual orientation, whatever it is. I mean, it's, that doesn't, that's, it feels icky, you know, like, why do you want to know? Like, what are you doing with that information? Because you, yeah, as you said, you don't have the movie behind it. So how valuable really is it? You know, it's a shallow assessment or a social, putting a social hierarchy to somebody based on very, very, very limited information.
Yeah. Yeah, so I like how you frame that as like a checklist, right? Of kind of like, where do you, like, it's almost kind of a pecking order, like you said, that hierarchy of like, where do you fall within that? And I think like, if anybody's experienced that, I mean, it sounds like you have, I mean, I for sure have, and I'm just kind of like, I want to get out of this conversation. Yeah, right
for the
now.
Sake of what do you want to know this? Like,
yeah. I'm with your horses. I'm like, I'm ready to move away.
Yes, do the move away. Yeah. This is one of those times. Yeah, right. Exactly. And just, you know, and everyone receives and manages that differently. It can shut people down in really significant ways. I love this. As I shared with you earlier, you know, your work has helped me reframe, even within in the Institute, how I want to do things and say things, where it's not just fighting what is existing and changing it, but how do we create something new? And I think that's, you know, the spaces of belonging. I think that's what we need to do. I read something once, and I wish I could remember her name, but I've shared this. There was a woman who stayed in a, she was protesting the cutting down of trees or forest, and she stayed in a tree for a very, very long time. It's very unfortunate. I don't remember the story. If anyone does or the person, please let me know. Yeah. And what she said, what she learned during that time was that it wasn't about fighting against it. It was about loving what she was for so much. Yeah. That her perspective and, you know, change from that negative and that, because it feels like that. It feels like that's so necessary. And so much has been fought historically, you know, and not to undermine any of that fighting where, you know, we have such a long way to go. But how do we do this differently by inside and outside of those systems, belonging to each other, really? You know, like, can't that become more powerful than the systems within? Will that break systems? I don't know. But it is a nice thing to imagine and that approach, because that's really what I want us to build as a community, you know, because the back and forth is exhausting where we put our energies, and those things need to be said and addressed. But what would you want to share with us as a community? Being that we are not in these recognized frameworks, you know, as a marginalized group or as a belonging group, you know, looking at pronatalism and singleism.
Yeah. I mean, I think first and foremost is that, like, what you're talking about, like, community is really, really key. And so much of my work is about the belonging movement, building a belonging community. And that's about community care, like offering support when you can give it, asking for support when you need it. Like, these are compassion practices. And I think the spaces that you're creating to have these conversations is the first place, because yes, like, I mean, kind of instincts is like, fight this system, like, change it, make it, you know, like, you're working within. And, you know, like, that's where sometimes we start. I definitely started there as an advocate, you know, and I think the next move is kind of thinking creatively with other people that appreciate your frame of mind. They might not share it, but they kind of recognize that it's needed. They're like, you're right. So how do we do this, right? In building those spaces, right? Like, building spaces for dialogue, to workshop ideas, to say, you know what, I tried this, you know, or, you know, this is kind of my employer pushing back and trying to fight me, right? And I think that we're in a really interesting time where, if you don't like the way that your organization is structured and you have some power and privilege to kind of break out on your own and start your own business, potentially to compete against that business that's not creating space for you and people like you, now, like, the kind of barrier to entry to do that is amazing. That's not for everybody, and I get it. So if you're someone who's working in a system, an organization that feels like it's, you have to brutally extract the things that are most precious to you, like talking about your family in the way that feels right to you, and you can't do that, that would be an example of brutally extracting something important to you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the great resignation right now. And not to say leave your job right away, just recognize that there are employers hungry to find you and to, you know, hire you for your zone of genius and for the culture ad that you bring, where your values can be in alignment with those organizations. That's an aspect of belonging, and that's to your favor right now. So, you know, and then I think for businesses that are trying to do this, you know, finding leaders like yourself, you know, and like, when we think about, you know, supplier diversity is bringing in experts, not only with the expertise to do a particular job, they have the lived experience too, you know? So for the kind of organizations that you're trying to build, you have so much to give to different employers who are trying to figure this out. So I think all of that together might be, you know, there's some avenue, hopefully for you, for your listeners, where it's like, oh, cool. Like, this is where we can begin. That's how we do it. And it's, unfortunately, it should have happened 5 decades ago. It's not going to happen overnight, right? Yeah. But when we find each other, you know, there's strength in numbers, and there's also kind of like, inert, you know, like you can get that momentum to kind of move together in a direction that's better for everyone, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes it does start, you know, the inclusivity starts with the inclusivity and acceptance within our community as well, to come together in that way, right?
Yeah.
To transcend some of those perceived differences and see where similar things are impacting us. And I think the workplace is one of those.
Yeah.
When you're looking at not only policy, but the emotional space of belonging, as you said, you know, what I think there's still so much silence and sometimes shame, at least for childless people who are grieving, and their grief is not seen as, you know, real, or how can you grieve something that you didn't have, or, you know, horrible things like that, to child-free people who maybe don't have that same experience, but they are impacted by the language, by the policies, by the being asked to work late, the assumptions of their own lifestyles.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, along with that then comes sharing stories when people are ready and able to be open, which I think is, you have done in such an impactful and beautiful way in your own life and work. And we thank you for that. Because then people can see, oh, there's more to this movie than the title, you know, or whatever. They can see the next chapter of that film. Because right now, I think it's not seen. It's still so on the surface, much of that. There's a lot to address, but I really hope that we can do that collectively as a community. And from this perspective, it's, again, I thank you because it's really helped name things within the perspective I wanted to hold, and I didn't necessarily have the language for it. And I think belonging is, yeah, it's beautiful. And it's a genius perspective and framework.
Wow. Thank you. Yeah. I mean, that piece of, you know, in the first part of the book around culture, really kind of avoiding euphemism, right? Like naming what you're seeing or experiencing or feeling, you know, whatever kind of sense lights up for you, you know, to kind of add some words to what you're feeling in your heart, to kind of draw connections to help other people understand or recognize that when you're experiencing these things, you can't show up fully and be 100%, right, in the work that you're doing. And, you know, just kind of like framing it for other people, like, this is what's lost. Like, you're not getting my best because of these particular barriers. And, you know, when you think about, you know, being able to identify them, maybe that's where the conversation starts of how to shift or transform. And I think if we live in that space of transformation right now, I think that's really, really key, right? And that's really different from change, which is like, I think this is like a really key part of the book, is like change is something that's reversible, you know? So like, you can change your mind, you can change your workout routine. If you work out, you can change everything, right? Mm-hmm. And you can always change it back. And I think when we think about status quo in the workplace, none of us want to change. We don't want to run the risk of changing back to what was once was. So in transformation, it's a metamorphosis. It is the caterpillar becoming the butterfly. It's you going from an infant to the adult person that you are today. Like, we're never going to go back to being babies, right? So like, how do we kind of birth, you know, or, you know, create or build, you know, whatever word you want to use there, you know, something that is going to be so much better, and it might live in your mind, right? But working together, we can create that, right? And that's where that kind of community piece comes in. So
yeah, I think it's so powerful and timely. I mean, it's, as you said, change, you know, can go back. You look at all of the legal threats and actions that are happening in so many spaces in the United States, particularly right now. And I love that you said that, you know, that a change that you don't want to go back to. And I think once we experience that with each other in the workplace or in community, then we want to protect it, right? We want to keep that feeling. And once it's embodied and you have that full experience of being seen or heard, whether that's with an individual or within an organization, which would be lovely, you know what the difference feels like too, because we know what it feels like to feel bad. But once you feel the another experience, you don't realize how much worse it felt, really, you know. I'm not saying that right, but that experience I'm sure we've all had in different ways. Like, when you finally get rest after being exhausted, you realize how actually exhausted you were because you were just going and going. Yeah. Something akin to that. We do not want to go back. We definitely want to go forward these things. And looking at the interlocking systems was brilliant too. Thank you for that. We have a couple of minutes left. Would you like to share quickly about where people can find you or what's next or a little bit about the conference?
Absolutely. Yeah. So if folks are interested in the book that we've been talking about, you can go to imaginebelonging.com, really easy. And there's some great bonuses if you're interested in the audio version of the book that just came out today. So really excited about that. So you can get it in many forms. And a lot of the concepts from the book, we put into action every year at our annual Belonging at Work Summit. And that's taking place this year, it's 2022, from July 11th through the 15th. And it's enormous. It's an incredible learning opportunity. If you want to be in community, you want to raise this particular topic, this is the space to do it. And there's so many different celebrated DEI leaders, social justice thought leaders as well, that are challenging us. And, you know, these are kind of conversations we have that are beyond kind of what you might expect going to kind of a workplace sponsored diversity, equity, and inclusion summit. So if you want to check that out, it's belongingatworksummit.com. And I'm happy to share those links with you as well, Christine.
Wonderful. Thank you. And we'll have a page up on our website with all your contacts and details as well shortly after the program. Well, thank you for listening today. Thank you for being here, Rhodes. What a wonderful conversation. Thank you for your beautiful work. And I look forward to employing many of these things in my next conversations. If you want to continue this conversation with us on any of our social platforms or be in touch with Rhodes, we'll have those contacts on our website as well. And this episode will be available for listening later today. So I will be posting that as well. Thank you again for being here and all the best with your continued work. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to New Legacy Radio. We hope Christine and her guests have given you the context and insight to connect with our community in new ways. What personal or professional change might you consider to acknowledge and include in our diverse community of people without children? Until we speak again, we invite you to engage with us on any of our platforms.